This is the Mo Gilligan Podcast. Sit tight, relax, and enjoy the Mo Gilligan Podcast.
Yes, what's going on, people? My name is Mo Gilligan. You are listening to the Mo Gilligan Podcast. Today's guest that joins me is a four-time MOBO-winning singer, songwriter, and presenter. I think she's someone that really is someone that is the icon in terms of for black female empowerment in the TV industry. And also, it was the first, she doesn't know this, but the first celebrity that recognized me doing comedy, but said I was good. I don't know if I've made sense of that. I don't know if you remember that. So welcome to the podcast, Jamelia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the introduction.
You know, I think what it is, though, for you, Jamelia, like, you're someone, for me, especially growing up, you know, if I look back at, like, you know, you started your music career in 1999.
Yeah,
that's when you released your first song. And that was a time where I just left secondary school. Mm-hmm. And it was a time where TV had, you know, morning TV, you know, whether it was like Pepsi chart show, Top of the Pops. And seeing someone like yourself, you know, you're doing music. But as I've grown up and I've got a bit older now, my teenage years, getting to my 20s, you still sustained a level of career that's still top tier.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, bless you.
Which is very difficult to do. And I'm only understanding that now. And I think, especially being a black woman as well in the music and television industry, I remember I was just thinking, like, I was like, rah, like, I really want to meet Jamelia and just have her on the podcast. Because, like, I'm only realizing what this industry like is like now.
Yeah.
So for someone like yourself, you know, chart success, you know, you presenting your, and also like you're a mother as well.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not to, that there's other mothers out there, but in an industry which is, you know, music, whether that is music, whether that's singing, songwriting, with presenting, it's like a triple threat as well. And as well as that, being a mother as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I was just like, I really want to get Jamelia on the podcast, you know? And when you said yes, I was like, bruh, Jamelia's going to do it. Sick. Like, because I get excited on the pod before people even come on.
Yeah.
I tell people that, hey, you know who's doing my podcast? Jamelia's doing the podcast, you know? Or there's so many names that it's like thrown around.
Yeah.
I guess who's doing my podcast? So, the first question I wanted to ask you was, what was it like for you growing up in Handsworth, Birmingham, in the 80s? What was that experience like as a young black woman?
Well, first of all, because I know a lot of people think I grew up in Handsworth. So my grandparents are from Handsworth. And I think I did go home to Handsworth, maybe when I was first born. But I actually grew up in somewhere called Hockley, which is near Ladywood. So, which doesn't make that much of a difference. Yeah. But I just want to say that out there.
You know us Londoners are mad ignorant.
Yeah,
like,
you don't care.
I'm guessing that's Birmingham, though.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Londoners are so ignorant that we're just like, all I know is about London.
Yeah.
London and up north.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Growing up in Birmingham, so I'm not sure if you know, but Birmingham is one of the most multicultural cities, I think, in Europe. I think maybe the most. And so my childhood was amazing. Like, I grew up, even the area that I grew up in, which this might sound like a strange thing to say, I grew up in an area that was full of single parent families. So I wasn't, it wasn't strange for me not to have a dad in the house, because nobody had a dad in the house. I later found out that that was kind of a setup by the government, but let's not go there because you don't want me to get that deep today. But for me to grow up in that environment, I felt seen, I felt normal, I didn't feel, you know, I just felt like it's lit. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that with my old self, but you know, it really like, when I look back at my childhood, I just feel, you know, things like carnival, and I was born a Rasta, so like, grew up with Rastafarian parents, and so in a Rastafarian environment.
Yes, exactly.
I only started eating chicken when I was about 11. That was the first time I tried it. One Christmas, my mom was just, she took her locks off, and then she was like, we're having chicken. So I don't know what was happening in her life at that time, but something happened and we had chicken on Christmas Day. We didn't even celebrate Christmas, but we did. And that was that. But it was, man, and it was fantastic. And yeah, you know, we used to sing like Jamaican songs in school. My school was across the road from my house. Mm. We was late every single day, but it was beautiful. Like, yeah, I loved it. Loved
I think
it.
You know what's so funny about, like, when you grow up in a black household at Christmas and you go back to school afterwards and you share your experience and you're just like, "Rah, that's what you man do, yeah?
Exactly.
Rah, we don't do that in my house, boy."
It's hilarious.
So that's amazing to discover that you grew up as Rastafarian. Because my dad's a Rastafarian, right? And it was so intriguing when I started doing comedy, because I remember, like, you know, I'd do interviews and stuff. So, your dad is Rastafarian. Like, what is that like?
Yeah.
I'm like, he's just a dad.
Exactly.
Just has locks. Like, he's not emperor.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just a dad with locks, like, simple. Yeah.
How was it for you, like, growing up from in a Rastafarian household? Yeah.
Do you know what? I loved it. Like, I was raised on, like, we didn't watch TV, and not, when I say that to people, they kind of think like it was like a cult or something. It really just wasn't. We just didn't need TV. Like, I never watched EastEnders. Like, there's a lot of things that other people speak about, and it's like, I'm literally, like, you just sit down watching the same thing like every day or every week at that point. And we grew up in a house full of music, Like, obviously, we had, like, you know, Berry's Hammond and stuff like that. But for me, it was more Budjo and Beanie Man and Ninja Man and Bounty Killer. Like, those kind of, growing up with those kind of, that's my foundation musically. So I'm sure we'll probably go on to speak about my career. But, like, so to end up being a pop artist was, like, mad to me. You know, it didn't align with how I kind of was raised.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm getting so nervous even saying this, because it sounds like I'm kind of like pushing it to the side or saying, I don't know, something different. But what I will say is that I think who I am today, I think people, it probably makes sense. Ah, you're a Rasta. Ah, you grew up in that environment, you know, having like black history. We knew our history from before we even stepped into school.
Yeah,
like, you couldn't tell me nothing. Like, history was, you know, my history teachers hated me because I was like, all right, don't really go like that. What about the black people? And, you know, so this me that you see today is the me that I've always been. But it's just, you know, I had to put it in hiding for a little bit to play the game.
Yeah, yeah. And talk to me about, like, playing that game, because as I said, you started your career in 1999, you know, going into like 2000, to the noughties.
Yeah.
What was the music industry like at that time? For you.
Okay, so when I got my record deal after I sang on stage at Notting Hill Carnival, cousins, I've got cousins who live in Shepherd's Bush, and every summer holidays we would come and visit them, and one of those summer holidays they found out I could sing, and my cousin, she was like, go on stage, and I think it was Rampage.
Yes,
I think it was Rampage.
Rampage sound system.
I was 15, and I was tiny for my age as well, so I probably looked about 11.
Yeah,
and she was like, "Yeah, man, my cousin can sing." And then I sang SWV's Right Here, and after that point, so before that point, like, there's no way I thought I was going to become a singer. There's just no way. So that would have been like Bank Holiday Monday. The next day, I was called into the record label. Someone in the crowd was from a record label.
Wow.
Lloyd Brown, his name is Daddy Bug. And he insisted that I came into EMI for a meeting. I came in for a meeting. My whole family came in with me. It was like all my cousins and my aunties. And it was just kind of like, and I'm just there like, I don't even want to sing. Like, what? Like, and then he was just like, you know, do you want a record deal? I'm like, okay, I guess so.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what that meant at the time. And he was like, who are you a big fan of? And I was like, oh, Mary J. Blige is my favorite. She's my idol. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, you can be the UK Mary J. Blige. And I was like, really? Wow. okay. And I got really excited about it. Yeah. And then, but then my mum was like, well, she's not signing nothing until she passes her GCSEs. Mm-mm. Now try now. Before that point, I was not going to pass my GCSEs. No way. Way. And I passed every single one of them with flying colours as well, getting like distinctions and all of that. Because I was just like, I really want to be like Mary J. Blige. Mm. And then, so, you know, literally no training. And then, so what happened at 15, they gave me a development deal, which is something that they used to do back then, where basically you're given things like dance lessons, media coaching, singing lessons. And they're basically basically training you to become a singer. Mm. And then, so by the time I was 18, 19, we did like a couple of test singles, but they weren't really singles. And Money was my first actual single. And they surprised me with Beanie Man being on the song. Like, imagine Beanie Man is on your wall.
Yeah.
And then they just play the song for you. And you're like, oh, no. And I was like, no. Like, that was it. My career could have ended that day. Like, I would have been fine. I would have been happy. Because, as I said, I didn't expect to be a singer in the first place. Mm. So, and then Beanie Man saying my name on my song. Are you mad? Like, I was like, over the moon. And then... And I guess that's where it began. And I think as more things happened, that song went to, I think it was number 5, and sold, I think it was something like 85,000 in the first week. Ooh,
which that's numbers.
It's numbers, but like now you can be number 5 with like 5,000 sold.
Yes,
but
So
imagine that, 85,000 and you just get to number 5.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just kind of, as more things, every little thing that happened to me in my career was just like, it was just a bonus. It was a bonus on top of Beanie Man. Because I was just like, it's Beanie Man.
I've topped
like,
it. I've clocked it.
Yeah, I've done it. I've made it.
Yeah, I passed the exam.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Literally. So what I would say particularly about my singing career is that it just became more and more surreal. But then when it's so surreal for so long, you kind of start thinking, okay, what else can I do then? Mm. And then I did a bit of acting. I loved it. I did, obviously, my presenting and on TV. Loved that as well. And now I just come up with an idea. Okay, can I do that? Yeah. I can. Let's try it. Let's do it. And I know that's really simplifying my journey, but that really is how I've operated from then. Even... one of the things that I will say, when I became pregnant with my first daughter, this was less than a year, I think, after releasing Money.
Yeah.
I think I was 19. Yeah, I was 19 when I was pregnant with my daughter. And I remember my mum saying to me, as I won my mobiles, so there was a year that I won 3 mobiles in one night and I was pregnant. I knew I was pregnant at that time. And at that time, if you were pregnant in the record industry, it was lock off season. Yes. Like, you just got dropped like straight away.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of had it in my head, I'm pregnant, so dance done. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then, but then once I had my daughter, I was like, yeah, well, I can still sing. Like, I know I've got a child, but I can still sing. Yeah. And I love singing. And let me just give it a try. And so I contacted the record label. I was like, yeah, I'm ready to come back in and record now. And to my surprise, they were just like, okay, come, let's do it.
Yeah.
And so that was like them taking a big chance on me, because you couldn't be in the industry and have a child.
Mm.
And so doing, like, defying those kind of odds were just yet again evidence that you should go for your dreams. You should, you know, if you have an idea, go for it. You know, the worst someone can say is no, or we don't like it.
100%.
You know what I mean?
Like, and I think it's very, you know, for women in any industry, you know, it's almost like looking at pregnancy of just almost like, oh man, like, oh, that might be it now.
Yeah.
Will I be able to get back into it?
Exactly.
And I think that's, as a man, we will never know what that feels like.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
I think that is, especially with, you know, things like the music industry, because the music industry, and sometimes I say, like, especially the music industry back then, it was almost like a kind of one in, one out as such.
Did you
ever feel that within the music industry?
So I came up around the same time that, I think Beverly Knight was either on the same label or in the building. And I remember having that feeling of, okay, well, Jamelia's here, so we're going to focus on Jamelia now. And I was just like, well, I don't want to be here at the sacrifice of somebody else. Do you know what I mean? And that was something that I really fought for. It was just kind of like, look how many white pop artists you've got. And me and Bev weren't even doing the same thing. And I love Beverly Knight. Mm. Like, I love her. And it was just kind of like, how do we exist and understanding that it's not in your hands? Because all they do, they just don't focus on it. And they did the same thing to me. Do you know what I mean? I can't remember who it was that came in, but somebody came in and I realized, well, I've had a 10-year run, but it's my time to move now because this person's coming in. And as I said, every experience and every success that I had was a bonus. So it was just kind of like, you know, I've done my thing and I'm really proud of myself and happy for everything that I've achieved. And, you know, and yeah, and other people should get a chance to do the same. And, you know, as a black woman, especially in those times, it was just part of the job that you had to move to make way for the next one, or the next one wouldn't have a chance. So, do you know what I mean? Yeah, sounds really sad.
Yeah,
but you know, it was the way that it was, and I kind of would like to think that things have changed now.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I hope so. Anyway.
Yeah, and what was it like in 2000 winning that MOBO award? Because I think for me growing up, the MOBO awards were just like, it's like, whoa, that's us. Like, that's us. That's our thing. Like, you go in school and you like, watch MOBO awards, isn't it? And it's not that other awards wasn't. It was just like, the MOBO awards has had that seasoning.
It did. And
other
and
awards didn't, you know?
But this is a thing, especially like in 2000. Mm. I think I was given my award, one of my awards anyway, was from Left Eye, from TLC. Another one was from, what's that guy's name? No, I'm going to forget his name. Rafael Sadiq. Like, are you mad?
Wow.
Like, are you mad? Do you know what I mean? Like,
so paint the picture for me. It's the year 2000. And you're, because I'm so, like, I am so nostalgic about that era.
Of course.
Where the MOBOs was at, like, the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Wembley and Arena like, and
Diddy
stuff.
Diddy and Mary J. Blige.
So how was that for you, that experience? Like,
for me, I am most proud. I've got a wall of awards in my house, and I am most proud of my MOBOs because of what it represented. And not only that, because of what I represented, a girl from Birmingham, you know, Hockley in Birmingham, picking up awards at the MOBOs and being presented by Left Eye from TLC.
Yeah.
Like, for me as well, like, you know, my teenage years, like, I was dressing like TLC. And she's giving me my award. She's saying my name. Like, I can't explain it. It's, you know, to share the stage with, I remember one of the MOBO awards, I shared a dressing room with Sierra. And like, and I'm like, but I'm supposed to pretend that this is normal. This is not normal.
Yeah,
100%. This is madness. But I've got to pretend that me and Sierra is just on the same level. And I can't. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, oh, hi, it's really nice to meet you. And but I'm still like that to this day. I remember once doing a photo shoot with Usher.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just going to keep doing this. Like,
yeah. Are you drop, mad? Man. Drop his name, man.
No, but what I'm saying is like, never have I come to terms with the fact that anyone put me in the same room with those people, you know, because no matter what, I still feel like the girl from Birmingham, which is what I am, you know, as much as I appreciate my career and I appreciate every single person who bought my records and, you know, and chased me around and stuff like that. I loved going back home because in Brum, no one's treating me any differently. I was still kind of like, I was still at home. It felt like I was going home, and everything that I did took place in London. So it was kind of like I could leave home, be Jamelia, and then I could go home. Sorry. I could go home and be Jem. And it was literally like two different people. And I think that is what has kept me sane, having that duality and the opportunity to escape each world being each person.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm answering your questions here. I'm just going off on one.
It's just so interesting how you explain it, because the one thing is when, and this goes whether you're in the industry or not, like home, it's like that phrase, home is where the heart is,
yeah,
really starts to make sense to you when you do, you know, you work abroad or whatever. The minute you come back,
yeah,
you're like, oh, I'm so comfortable here.
Yeah.
This smell.
Yeah.
It smells how it normally smells. It might smell like piss, but you're like, I'm used to this pissy lift smell around the area. Do you know what I mean? Like, I realized that. I think when I was able to start traveling and touring, the moment I would come back home and it's loud, sirens are going around, and you got like people, and it is the thing, you know, you go to your corner shop, people are like, yo, what are you saying? Man, like, Mo, cool, man, what's going on? Yeah, not much, bruv, so what, can I get a picture?
Yeah,
I'm buying some bread and milk, fam, like, it's ain't really, but I love that because it's the honesty you get.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which at a time, it's very easy to get caught up in the whirlwind of things happening very quickly.
Oh yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Yeah, you know, like your career can go by so quickly because any industry. Sometimes you're, especially I think with, you know, music and television, and you know, it can happen so quickly where you're always thinking ahead and not in the moment.
Absolutely, not
and it's very it. It's so hard because sometimes I see videos and stuff of myself back in the day.
Yeah,
and there's a lady called, I don't know if you know this lady called Mrs. Hinch.
She's cleaning.
And my girlfriend was telling me that recently she was on this morning. She was like, I always think back of my old life before this happened, where no one didn't know me, and I could just have that normal life.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as much as the good happens, is the bad.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know?
How was your experiences like at that time? Because that's a time where, you know, like tabloid. You know, now you have, you know, you have trolls and social media and gossip pages, but this is at a time where tabloids were writing anything they wanted.
Listen,
you know,
literally anything. Like, I think that was definitely the thing that made me fall out of love with being super famous. There was a period of my time where I was really famous and I could go to the corner shop. There was one time I went to Orton Towers and it was in the papers. And I'm like, what's that? Like, why is that news? And for me, like, as I said, I still to this day enjoy being able to go back to my cocoon and not be Jamelia. I also enjoy going to work and being Jamelia. But when you are encroaching on people who haven't chosen to be in the public eye, people who, you know, just my loved ones and you know, my family members and stuff, like, you have to remember, I'm from inner city Birmingham. So we all face, you know, we're, as much as we love where we're from, we're all victims of our circumstances as well. You know, 100%. there's a lot of trauma in the community, and well, I'll just say it like it is. For instance, like, my brother's going to prison and stuff like that. Like, these are very real things that are happening behind the scenes, and these are people that I love. Do you know what I mean? And yes, and in the hood, it's normal for a family member, and rightly or wrongly, it's normal for a family member to go to prison. What's not normal is that you get splashed on the paper, that it's splashed all over the papers, or when you're trying to go and visit, you're getting papped, and you know, and your kids are in the pictures, or I don't know, those kind of things. I felt like it was a real invasion of privacy, and it deeply affected my relationship, particularly with my brothers. Like, and you know, if there's a casualty of all of this, it's definitely my personal relationship with my family. And for me, it's kind of like the decisions that I had to make was, I'm going to step back so that you don't get dragged into this. But at the same time, I sacrifice relationships that have been my foundation. Do you know what I mean? And that's definitely been really, really hard. And, you know, and I think that's why I pour so much into my little family that I've created, because it's like, well, at least I get to have this, you know, that it's with everything. There's a sacrifice. There is a sacrifice. And, you know, I remember one of the Mobile Awards, I invited all my brothers to come, and one of them filmed me, and I was like, yeah, big up my brothers. Did they boop, boop, boop. I was on the front of the papers. Jamelia supports gun violence, and she imitates a handgun and blah blah blah. And I'm like, that's just culture. That's what we do in a dance, and you can't explain it to people. You can't explain it to Middle England who don't do that.
Especially back then. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you couldn't even breathe without being like, oh, you're shouting.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just breathing, bro.
Literally. So it's kind of like, you know, it was beautiful times, and, you know, and everyone has this idea you want to bring everyone through. But the reality is like, if you really do want to be successful as a black person in this country, I'm not sure you can.
Mm.
And that is the saddest thing, I think, out of it all. Sorry, I didn't mean to make it all.
No, but it's so heartbreaking because it's like, you know, it's like for me in my career, I am like one tweet away it all being done.
Oh, yeah.
And even like there's times where, you know, I have spoken out about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when everyone was putting up black squares, people are saying to me, wait, when are you going to put up a black square? When are you going to put up a post?
Sometimes you are a black square. Like, I am a black square. Like, I don't, don't chat to me. Like, listen, I don't know if it's because I'm approaching 40, but I just don't, like, don't come to me with no foolishness in 2020. Like, just don't. Like, but this is the thing. I'm not in your position. Like, I'm not. I literally have nothing to lose. Like, I'm just like, I don't care. I've got my mortgage.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm fine. I've literally got a swimming pool in my back garden. I don't care. Like, come for me. Cancel me.
But I think it's like, so many people always say to me, like, oh, like, you know, be careful what you say and X, Y, Z. And because I think we're so used to seeing people in our community get to a position and we just, I want you to stay there. But just, you know, you can't do what you want to do.
Yeah, no. Like,
him over there, he can do whatever he wants to do, bro. He'll be in the papers, doing whatever he likes.
Yep.
You know, you can't do that, you know?
Exactly.
It's almost like when your mum used to say to you as a kid, when it's like, go outside and wear your coat. Because him, he's going to get sick and get a cold. You can't afford to be sick and get a cold.
I got to go to work. I need help.
Yeah. He can do that. His mum don't work. Dusty woman.
Exactly.
Where me, I'm sitting there like, I want to take my coat over all the other kids, my man.
Wrap up,
scarf, gloves. I'm like, oh, mum, we're just playing 44 at home, man. I can't have all this equipment on, man. While Billy's out there in a t-shirt in the rain. I said, oh, come on, man. And that's literally it.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, where I'm out in this industry now, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be reckless. And because I know also the pressure that comes from being in that kind of limelight. Did you ever feel like there was that pressure from the black community?
Okay, so what I will say is that throughout my years as an artist, I think my artist years and my being on TV years are two totally different eras of my own life. But like, being an artist, I just felt like I have to be, for want of a better term, whiter than white. And when I say that, it meant I would never drink, I'd never do no foolishness. Like, in a way, like, it's like I wasn't able to live. So I never, you know, people have their 20s. I never had my 20s. You know, I'm probably just starting to have them now, maybe. Mm. But like, I just feel like, and I must point out, it was a sacrifice I was completely willing to make because I wanted to be successful. And by the time I started to think very seriously about my career, I had a daughter and I didn't want, I already wasn't with her dad. And I just kind of thought, I just don't want to become another statistic. I don't want, you know, there's like the amount of people said to me to my face, you've got a daughter now, you can't do nothing, you've mashed up your life, you've done it. And for me, that was motivation. I was like, all right, we're gonna see. I had my daughter in 2001 and I released the Thank You album in 2004, and that was the album that, I'm telling you, I put my heart and soul into it. And that was the one that really exploded things for me. And it was kind of like, all right. Yeah. Like, you know, this is it. This is it. This is exactly what I've worked for. Mm-hmm. One of the things people might not know is that when you release an album, a successful album, you're promoting it for at least 2.5 years. Wow. So yeah, so and this is another thing. A lot of people might not know that I had international success. So I was going all around the world. So
Australia.
Yeah. Oh, you did your research. Yeah. So places like Australia, New Zealand, all over Europe. I didn't really go to America, but touring. I toured with Justin Timberlake, Usher, Destiny's Child. I toured with Destiny's Child like 5 times. I really thought Beyonce was my best friend. She's not, but anyway, I love her. Shout out Ivy Park. Please send me a box next time because it's too expensive. No, I'm joking. But yeah, the things that I got to do and the places that I got to go, my children have been to every single continent on the planet. Like, to me, that's success, because I'm able to pass on things to them. If you were to meet my children, you'd just be like, nah, they're amazing. And it's because of the opportunities that I was able to afford them through my hard work. And I kind of feel like, as much as, you know, there are things that I'm very sad that I've sacrificed, I would sacrifice everything for my children. So it was worth it if it meant that my children get to benefit from, you know, from even traveling. Like, black people, we should be traveling. Like, the amount of things I've learned from going to another person's country and immersing yourself in the culture, like, that kind of education is, it's you can't compare it to anything.
100%.
Do you know what I mean?
So important.
And it's, yeah, and it's, and even for me, like, to learn, like, my daughter learned to swim in Thailand. Like, what? Yeah. Again? What? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you had told me at 12 or 11, like, something like that would happen to me, it's just like, yeah, I would, there's no way I would believe you. But
and
I think where I am now in my career is, okay, how do I share this information? How do I share this? And I feel like the best way to do that is to be your authentic self. But to be your authentic self as a black woman in the UK means that I can't survive in the entertainment space that I was in. Because me being honest about myself and who I am makes you feel uncomfortable. And because you're uncomfortable, you don't like me.
Yeah.
And the public don't like me. So where I am now, it's kind of like, you've got to do your own thing. You've got to create your own space. And that is, it's like a really weird territory to be in. But at the same time, I've never been happier, because I just feel, not only do I feel in control, but I feel like, I just don't feel like a prisoner anymore. Because that's what it feels like. I can't be myself. I can't do that, which is a cultural thing.
Yeah,
I'm Jamaican. Yeah. Like, that's what we do at every opportunity.
But sometimes I feel like those things are very disrespectful to our culture, because you don't understand it, so already you've already demonized it. Mm-hmm. And there's some things, you know, for other cultures that, like, it's just like, oh, that's just part of their culture.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean that. But the minute I go, zap, it's already like violence, gun crime.
Yeah.
He's most probably a murderer. And it's just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, and it's I don't know, it's hard, because it's like, now I find what's happening with that, it's changed from, like, you do that and it makes the papers, to now misrepresenting someone who, like, getting someone's picture wrong.
Yeah.
In the paper.
Listen. Which,
it's gone beyond this thing where it's just like, it's just an accident.
Yeah.
Because if it happens every 2 months, then surely there should be someone in the HR department, in the journalism building saying, guys, this is happening a lot. This now needs to happen. Because if you're an editor, you would look for typos.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
There are people whose job it is to fact check. Like, do not. And I think, again, it's about understanding what these industries are doing. Right now, all they want you to do is share their content. And black people, we are the best at sharing content.
Yeah.
You get the picture wrong, and that article is going to be shared way more. Like, it's going to be shared a million times more because you got the picture wrong. They don't care. They don't care why you've shared it. All they need are the numbers.
Yeah,
and this is the thing that we're not understanding. Even when it comes to companies showing us, because that's all it is, using us to further their brand and say, oh, I'm diverse. It's not necessarily support for us. Because if you really were supporting us, we'd be in the meetings. We would be the ones making decisions. Yeah, we would be, you know, executives and consultants. But you don't want to do that. You don't want to pay us. You want to use us. And for me, it's kind of like, I'm not being used. I'm not even being used to share your story or your foolishness. And of course, everyone's outraged. We live in England and most of you are racist. Okay, moving on. What we doing? Do you know what I mean?
I think there is definitely something in black outrage, because the first time I ever got mistaken for someone else, at first it's funny.
Yeah.
Where I think I've told this before, but I was on, I went to the NME Awards, first time ever.
Okay.
And they've mistaken me for Marcel from Love Island. So
it's got, not that hard.
It's definitely not. But the funniest thing is, it was, so we had, so sorry, I had a picture of Marcel from Love Island and said Mo Gilligan and Clara Amphora, right? So this is very early on, where this is at a stage where it's just like, like Marcel is like, at that time is like massively much more well known than I ever was. So it's like, it's like, how did you get that wrong? Like I took a picture as well. So the fact that, what, you know, you go upstairs and some of these award shows and they're doing pictures, so I'm like, what doesn't make sense here is that I took a picture in this same photo booth that Marcel and Clara did. So how you've got this wrong doesn't even make sense now. Because someone could be listening and be like, well, there's, you're both there. And they're like, who's who? And I'm like, well, no, because when you go in there, that, how's it going, Matt? Mo Gilligan, right?
Yeah.
If you get a couple pictures. I gave out an award that night. So,
yeah, they take the mic.
So it's not like I just walked in.
Yeah.
Well, come and get a picture. Flex. Flex. I can understand how you could mistake. Yeah. But it's like, I gave out an award. There was a purpose person that said, I do the PR. We're going to put this in a magazine.
And they've got the little sheet of paper with all the little pictures 100%. Of everyone, with everyone's names beside, because, it.
And it's just, it's like,
not, it's not a game.
It's like, not. And I think at first it was easy to just laugh it off.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. Like, and I did. I very much laughed it off. I remember tweeting it and was like, okay, cool. You know, in this week's What Black Person Is It This Time? Find out next week on Dragon Ball Z. And you can have a bit of a laugh with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it happened again. And then it happened again where it was just like, come on, man. Like, this is like, it's not that, it's a coincidence, don't happen twice.
It's as simple as this. If you can do it for white people, you can do it for black people. 100%. It's as simple as that.
Yes.
And I refuse to believe you just don't care. I don't think it's that. I think it's because black outrage is one of the most lucrative things for them going. Like, let us be mad about anything. We share this thing. They don't, as I said, they don't care how we share it and why we share it, just that we share it.
Yeah.
And if it means that I gotta, you know, put you next to Stormzy and say, this is Stormzy, be it. And this is another thing as well. Like, at the moment, I'm being called a lot to, you know, to speak on black things. I don't want to speak on black things. Not because I don't want to speak about black things, but there are so many other things that I would love to be on. Like, I don't know. I love organizing my cupboards. Yeah. I know that sounds just so dead, but there's a whole industry out there that do organizing. I love journaling. I love, like, you know, I love being a parent. I'm a homeschooler. I love cooking. I love looking after my hair. There's so many other things you can call me for, but George Floyd has happened. Can you come and, you know? And it's just like, well, what are we? And it's kind of like for instance, when I watch you, I'm so happy for you because I feel like you're in your element and I feel like you have control. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you're in a position of power. And for me, that is, it's so inspiring. But not only that, it's kind of like, it's reassuring that, I don't know, someone's being let in to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
Do you know what I mean? And I kind of feel like, I want you to go to the highest high Netflix. Whoop. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to keep doing it now and watch it. You watch it. Wait, no, no, papers. Hopefully it won't. They don't care about me that much anymore. But, you know, and I just think, like, we have to be confident enough to pursue our own things now and stop asking for validation and permission from entities that don't necessarily want you at the forefront of it. But that being said, if they are to give you your own show or something like that, then yes, take it and run with it and do every single thing you can in your power with that. But it's just like, We now live in an environment where we are capable of creating careers for ourselves with our phones.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. And we need to really take advantage of that, especially 100%. Black people, because we may not have the resources and the connections, but you may think you don't, but you actually do. Just run with it. Just go with it and don't think, oh, I've got to wait until, you know, it gets picked up by a major, because it might not ever get picked up. Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't mean you shouldn't be doing it. I'm proper waffling right now. Yeah. But do you know what I mean?
No, 100%. No, you're not waffling. I think it's very, you know, I always say, we live in this DIY generation now where young people, and it's not always young people. It's, you don't need to be young to start whatever you want to do on social media.
Exactly.
You know, if you're 45 years old and you say, do you know what? I really want to start rapping.
Yeah, yeah.
Big man going
Why
rap,
not?
Bruv.
Ain't
it? Be the best drill old rapper that you can be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I only really realized that this year. You know, I think sometimes being in this TV space at the age I'm at now is 32. It's like we're looking for young, fresh talent.
Yeah.
And it's until we done the documentary and Luella Gilliam was like, why? What about us lot?
Yeah.
Like, why do you just need young people?
Yeah.
And it really dawned on me. And it's like, yeah, that's true, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just young people. It's people with experience
and
as well.
I think, I was just going to say, I think there is that as well. And maybe it's because I'm becoming an old foot myself. But I just kind of feel like, don't forget, like, there are so many of us. I don't think I include myself in this, but that didn't get the proper exposure that they should have gotten at the time because of the environment that they existed in.
Yes.
And, you know, like that documentary that you did the other day, like it was so good to see people like Slim on there. And do you know, because it was beautiful because it was like, not only were you celebrating your own success, but you were paying homage to those who, whether or not, it was literally, it felt to me like, I don't care if you don't know this man's name, you should. Do you know what I mean? And for me, it was kind of like, yeah. Give these people their props and, you know, give them their flowers because unfortunately not everybody got them. Do you know what I mean? What I will say is I do feel like I got mine. So I'm not here kind of like, as I said, I want to be someone who, I want to be an agent of change. I want to be someone who has, I do have a lot of knowledge or I don't know. Maybe it's confidence as well because I just kind of feel like, I know what it takes to make it.
Yeah.
And now I want to share. And it's not just about being in the entertainment industry either. Mm. I think it's just about our confidence as a people. I feel like we need to all ensure that we're agents of change. And if we all have access to a social media account, that's you.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? What are you sharing? Who are you sharing? I like this. Let me share it. I loved your, like, are you talking, you know, when you said at the beginning about I shared your thing, your, was it the one with the police?
It might be different types of police officers.
Yeah. Like for me, it's just like, because again, it's understanding the power in me sharing that as well. Like, I love this. This is sick. Mm. Let's share. Do you like it? Or do you know what I mean? And I feel like it's that kind of thing. I only came across Munya.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I only came across Munya after watching your podcast. Mm. So I know he's been about, like my kids were like, yeah, I know about him. Mm. But it's just like, I didn't know. And then I was just like, I have to share because all of us have particular audiences, particular niches. And it's just kind of like, don't you want to be a part of that? Don't you want to contribute and a share is a contribution. Do you know what I mean? Like
it's definitely important to like play your part somehow, however you can, whether it's sharing it to friends, telling people. And I know especially for myself there is that kind of pressure, and especially with me doing the documentary, while the spotlight was on me, it was important to share it with everyone else.
Absolutely.
However way I could, in a way that's not just a retweet.
Yeah.
You man, check this man out.
Yeah.
I'm like, what can I do that's better than a retweet?
Yeah.
Why can't I just get these people on my show?
But like, this is the thing. You're in a position of power. Mm-hmm. You're in a position of power. And, you know, I love to see how you're using that power. Because, you know when they say, like, some people, you just get rich and switch. And, you know, I think I got rich and switched as well at one point. But at the same time, I kind of think, like, understanding and being aware of that power is probably a greater power than the power itself, if that even makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you know what I mean? And I feel like that's exactly what you're doing. And, you know, I'm very, very proud of you. Like, incredibly
thank you
proud
so much,
of you.
Man.
Yeah.
Get your snacks, chill out, and enjoy the Mo Gilligan podcast.
I remember, like, if you go back to the you're one of the first, like, celebrities I met at a show.
Yeah.
And you was like, oh, that was really good. Well done. And I don't know what you, what that actually meant for me was like, that was a big deal.
Oh.
Because I remember that day, I always remember that day very vividly. I remember Kojo had a show at Tabernacle.
Yeah.
And I remember I was doing some comedy and I'd done the show. And it's so hard when you're, because you know, like when you're first starting out, right? It's like, I know I'm at this show, but I also know this audience aren't really bothered for me.
No,
I'm almost like a spring roll at a Chinese buffet.
Stop it.
Do you know what I mean? And that's not a bad thing.
No,
you know what I mean? Sometimes
you've
got to be a spring roll before you're the sweet and sour chicken.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because when a spring roll is there, you're like, eh, I had spring rolls before, but nah, let me just get egg fried rice. And, you know what I mean? Like, I ain't bothered about this spring roll. And that's okay. And I was very comfortable in my skin when I first started. I was just like, you know, I am starting out.
Of course.
I understand that people don't know who I am and stuff. But I remember going back, I finished. And as I said, you know, when I was always performing to like people who were like my peers. And, you know, like performing to like, especially black people as well. Hardest critics as well.
Yes. And a London crowd is even like... I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I know I'm not a comedian, but like performing in London was always my worst fear. Always. Because you lot are so hard to please. But it's because you're spoiled in Birmingham. Like, if you come to Birmingham, it's like, oh my God, I'm in Birmingham. But like in London, it's like, okay.
Yeah. No, but Londoners, we are. I say this a lot. When I've performed and done comedy, we started the tour and I went to Cardiff first.
Okay.
Lovely. Like my mum's from Cardiff, from Wales as well.
Okay.
So like that felt like, oh cool, like I've been coming here since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So performing, then we went to like Oxford, Liverpool, and I was like, people are so friendly, man. Wow. I could do this for the rest of my life. And it was like, got that London show coming up though. So
And
that show was so like, so we had the show, and in the day I got to present an award at the Q Awards.
Oh, okay.
So this was a big deal because I was like, I've got a show later on. And after the show, Skepta goes to me, he's like, yeah, like you're sick, innit? Like your stuff. And I'm like, right, Skepta. Skepta likes me. Whoa. I remember behind me, Ed Sheeran was behind me.
Yeah.
And then Stormzy come over. He went over to Ed. What's going on, Ed? Aww. So I've met Ed before.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do the whole like, what's going on, bro? You all right, yeah? And he's like, hey, Mo, you all right? And I'm like, yeah, just chilling, Ed. You know how it is. And then I remember after the show, Skepta and his friends. So Skepta was there. Example was there. Stormzy was like, oh, like, can we come to your show? I was like, you don't want to come to my show? I felt like the cool kid in school. Aww. I was like, oh my God, the cool guys want to go to my party, man. Like, they all turned up. And I remember we was in the dressing room and a friend of mine, he was my tour support, a friend of mine, Kay Cudd.
Yeah.
He was sitting in the dressing room and they'd all just come in to dress. Cause they obviously like, they're, you know, like as a celebrity is a bit like, oh, like I'm going to get recognized, do pictures. Can I just hide away for a bit?
Yeah, exactly.
So they just was all in the dressing room, which wasn't a dressing room. It was just another room. Cause it was a nightclub. It was another room they didn't use that day. So we're all in this room. And I remember Kay was just like, oh my gosh, Stormzy, Skepta, Example, what's going on here? And it was, I remember going on stage and performing and they would all walk past. And this whole London audience were all there for me. Were like, and they're like, we don't care about you right now, bro. Because Stormzy walked in, skipped up. And it was like, guys, you're here for me.
Like, hello.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's so important, like, getting that recognition from, especially like black entertainers in the industry. It's so, and that's why I go back to that story when you saying, oh, like, well done, that was really sick.
Aww.
It meant so much for my confidence because I was like, I don't care what anyone thinks. Yeah. Jamelia thinks I'm funny. Like, I don't care what anyone thinks. And that day, I remember also that day, Mega Man was there.
Oh, I love
and
Mega.
That's why I remember that day so vividly, because I'm like, bro, like in one day, Jamelia and Mega Man said I was good. Please.
Game over.
I'm ready, Wembley Arena. Like, have you ever been starstruck by anyone you've kind of met? Is there anyone like where you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to say?
Listen, I get starstruck by everybody. I'm starstruck now. Like, I'm seriously, because like I love to be entertained. I know that sounds a bit of a weird thing to say, like, entertain me, but I love to laugh.
But you used to come to a lot of the shows back in the day, man. You was always at the Hackney Empires stuff. You were very present, man.
But and that's the thing, is I think if you're a part of a scene, it's important to kind of, you know, know the people, know who you're around, you know, what inspires people, what are they enjoying, you know. This is gonna sound really mad. So as I said, I've met everybody. Like, I have to tell you this story. So I told you Mary J. Blige is my idol, right? So I'm on CD UK. Remember CD UK?
Caddy and that and Beck. Come on.
And I've just performed. I think I've just done just did my photo shoot with Usher. When I come downstairs, Mary J. Blige is on the show performing. So I was just like, okay, Usher and Mary J. Blige in the same day. And then so my friend Royce then, because I had to perform as well, after I performed, he came and he was just like, Mary J. Blige wants to meet you, man. And I swear, I literally fell on the floor crying my eyes out. And I was like, I just can't do it. Literally crying. Yeah. And I never met her. I never ended up meeting her. I was too, like, I was dying. I was like, nah, I can't. And let me tell you another thing. There are so many people who you may be a big fan of and you meet and they disappoint you. That's one of the worst things to happen.
Yeah,
so, 100%. And it wasn't the reason, but I feel like sometimes it's kind of like, I'm glad I didn't meet her because she's still just, you know, an idol to me. But the person that was most starstruck about actually meeting, it's going to sound so mad, Max Brenning from EastEnders.
Yeah.
And I don't even watch EastEnders, but I know about Max.
I met Max.
And I was like, no way. And you know what? I think it was as well, like meeting him in a random place as well. It wasn't like at a ceremony or anything like that. It was just in a random place. And I was like, no way, that's Max from EastEnders, you know? Like, yeah. So that's probably the height of my starstruck business. But yeah, you know what it is? I get starstruck because I don't believe I'm meant to be here. You know, and not even in a like low self-esteem way or whatever, but as I said, I always go home and I'm me. I never disconnect from the me that I am. So like to me today, this is a day out. This is a day out as Jamelia, but it's just like, I'm going to go home and, you know, my daughter's going to tell me to change her nappy and, you know, and it's just going to, you know, clothes need to wash. And do you know what I mean? It's just, but I love that. Like I need normality as much as I need, you know, I wouldn't even say like I need this side of my life anymore, because I have so many memories and things that I've achieved. I've surpassed what I believed I could achieve. So to kind of live like that, obviously I have ambitions and there's other things that I still would like to do. But as far as chasing, you know, fame or anything like that, it's just not about that for me. I'll do it if I want to do it. I'll do it if I feel like doing it, if it seems enjoyable, if it's something that I'd like to sink my teeth into. Like, I'd love to do some acting. I'd love to do some more acting. I kind of dipped my toe in it a little bit. I really enjoyed it. I was doing really well. And then, I don't know, I kind of just was just like, I don't know. And then I did Loose Women. That was, you know, I really enjoyed that. Really, really enjoyed that. But at the same time, I was really burnt by the experience of, you know, just kind of being a black woman in that environment where, you know, everyday people are telling you that they hate you. And when you check it, it's like, essentially, you hate me because I'm being vocal as a black woman. I'm being honest. I'm telling you stories that have happened to me and have happened to, you know, many other black women. But because it doesn't register to you, it's not interesting, and you know, just come off my TV. That was a huge like turning point for me in my career. I was not used to being disliked, and I think what made it worse was I felt like I was being disliked for being myself, because when I went on to Loose Women, it wasn't like a normal, you know, I don't think it was an expected transition for someone like me, but what I felt,
and
was,
I think as well, people wasn't used to that.
Yeah,
they wasn't used to seeing someone go from being, you know, musician to exactly. a TV presenter. Exactly. It's almost like, why are you doing this? You're taking someone else's job. You're like, why? How?
Yeah,
I'm just sitting there talking.
Exactly. But for me, I saw it as a fantastic opportunity to be a representative for women that weren't represented on that show. I wanted to be, you know, not only just as a black woman, but as someone from the inner city, you know, someone, you know, just not having, they had a lot of women on that show who all had the same experience. And it's like, yeah, but you do know there's a different way of thinking, you know, and I felt like it was important to be that representative. But after a while, I realized I'm just banging my head against a brick wall here. And so the decision to leave was kind of like a mutual decision. But I think how they dealt with me after me leaving was like, it was wild. But I just realized that it's the industry does chew you up and spit you out. And when you're useful to them, you're, you know, cream of the crop. And when you're not, you know, I don't know. And I think also, because I spoke about my experience after, and when I was on Strictly, basically when I was on Strictly, every single day they would tell me that I couldn't wear my natural hair and they wanted me to relax my hair. Every single day for 10 weeks, they're telling me that you have to relax your hair doesn't look elegant and blah, blah, blah. And I remember just like, do you understand, like, you don't even understand the levels of disrespect that you're saying to me as a black woman, to not be able to wear my hair naturally because it doesn't appease you and your audience is highly offensive and highly disrespectful. And bear in mind, nobody at that time that I did it, nobody in the dressing room knew what to do with my hair or knew how to do my makeup. So I was doing my own hair and makeup for every show. This show was being shown to 8 million people a week, and you can't get a person in to come and do my hair.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So, but what I should do is relax my hair, chemically straighten my hair so that you guys know how, what you're going to do, just look a slick back, like, you know. But luckily for me, I knew how to do my hair. Yeah. And I would do things like do my hair, and then they'd take a picture of me in the hair and makeup. So that experience was like, it was like torture. Do you know what I mean? And this was at the end of my time on Loose Women. So, and I'm having similar experiences. We're doing our own hair. Anybody black was doing their own hair and makeup at that time. Every time I went on to Loose Women. But I wasn't allowed to say anything. And it's kind of like, I feel like at the end of that, I was just like, you know, I'm shelling everybody now and I'm telling everybody what you did. I'm telling everybody what you did because this is wrong and I want it to change. And I don't care if it means that I will never work in the industry again. And so I spoke about it and have spoken about it. And I literally don't care. But for me, again, it's very important to be an agent of change, even if it means sacrificing my thing or my opportunities. And what I will tell you is my opportunities have been sacrificed. There are so many times that opportunities arise and it's like, oh, but it's Jamelia. So you have not seen me on ITV. You have not seen me on BBC. And it's because, you know, I spoke, I was honest about what happened to me. It's mad. It's mad.
No, but that's,
and,
like, yeah? That is, hearing that is so heartbreaking, because it's like, you know, now we're at a place where it's like, these things are only really happening now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where I'll get on set and I'm like, rah, this makeup artist got black hair products. Rah. And I'm sitting like, where you get this from? Like, where'd you get sporting waste from? Yeah.
Like, I used to have people like, oh, do you mind if I just watch what you're doing just so I can see? Oh, so you just, oh, you do the little, okay, and what's that for? And what's that product called? But this is the makeup artist.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's like, but for me, it's kind of like, I'm very, like, I hope that any black woman that's going on to Loose Women now, I hope you are dealing with
just
them.
In,
I hope
in general,
you are
in all TV aspects. Well, it's course, so important of that course. You know, if you're doing hair and makeup and all these things, it's like know what you're doing, man.
Of course, it's, you know, I mean, it's
if you're
going
to cook for someone, you're going to say, "Are you allergic to anything?" That's what you do. Do you have a gluten intolerance?
Exactly.
Are you allergic to peanuts?
Exactly.
All right, cool. Mm.
But it goes, and please don't get me started on all of this. But it goes much deeper than that. You have to know that you have to have a hair and makeup qualification to go to work in these environments. But hair and makeup qualification does not include black hair and skin. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to know how to do it to be a successful makeup artist.
Yeah,
and I think it's about those things have to change. It's at the crux of it. And I kind of think, and this is another thing, like, yes, I really miss working in TV. Like, I loved it, and I feel like it's, you know, that's where my talent lies, that's where I came alive. But at the same time, I kind of feel like, you know what, I'm glad that I was the loudmouth black woman who decided to say something, because it's changed things. And, and I'm not saying I changed things, but I guarantee you're not going to do that to the next woman that sits in, because you think she might do what I've done, which is, you know, shell you down in public. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it's sad because I haven't lost my talent. But at the same time, I feel like, well, I can use it for my own thing. So, just before COVID, I was about to shoot season 2 of a YouTube show that I do called The Table. And that was kind of me taking it into my own, I think, just doing something that was within my power. So yeah, it's not gonna have the entertainment, not the entertainment, it's not gonna have the production value of Loose Women, but this is what I can do with what I have.
And safe space for you to talk about whatever you want and not feel repercussions about it. And also at a time where now people are coming out and talking about things you're talking about, the treatment you've had, the way you felt, the disrespect as well. And I think we need those platforms for the next generation to watch it and be like, oh, cool, man.
When
I go in the room now, I'm going to make sure they know how to do this to my hair, or have the right skincare for my makeup and stuff. So,
and just, I think also as well, feel empowered enough to ask the questions and to say, oh, you know, do you know what you're doing? Like, feel empowered enough to say that. Because for me, it's not about, you know, it's not really about activism, and it's not about anything. It's just like, if you want to use us for your things, like, just at least cater to us. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's very simple. Like, I'm not saying it needs to be, you know, an all black team or whatever, but just make sure whoever you've got in the room knows what to do with my hair. So I'm not having to sit next to Sally, who's getting the whole pampering treatment. And please bear in mind that that is very relaxing to get your hair and makeup done. But I have to do my own on top of prepare for appearing on your show.
Mate.
Do you know what I mean? But it's just not taken into consideration. Do you know what I mean? Man.
Do you know what is so mad? Because as a guy, we don't have to go through those things for makeup.
Yeah.
But there are times where I've had my makeup done and I'm like, what is this woman doing?
The ash.
And I'm just literally like, yeah, if you can stop de-shining me, because now I look like chalk. I look like, you know when you get a chocolate like and it's out the packet and it's like moldy dry. And you're like, bro, why is it your... Oh, it's gone off.
Yeah.
That's what my face looks like. And I'm looking at... I watch it back like, bro, like, what?
Why would...
Somewhere there should have been a producer to say like, why is Mo's face looking like a Cadbury's whole nut?
Does the like, producer know? Does the producer know that your face is not supposed to look like that? So, do you know what I mean?
And it's so... I think there's time when I first ever started... This is way before I started doing that big nasty, but just small shoots here and there.
Yeah.
And you do makeup. And as I said, for a guy, I don't really need much.
Yeah.
I have good skin.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, they'd be like, oh, what do you normally have for makeup? I'm like, just de-shine me, because my face does get a bit shiny. Cool. But then it's like, oh, this is... It, sometimes it'll feel like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
I'll have a little experiment on this guy. And I'm seeing palettes come out, mixing on the hand, and I'm like, whoa, I don't think I need all this, you know? And then, like, I'll get makeup done, and it's like, so the hair, what are we doing with the hair? And this is when I had more black, like a high top, so I'd sponge it.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget once, I took out my sponge, and I was like, no, I'll just do my hair in it. Are you sure? Do you want me to put a little bit of something in it? I'm like, no, honestly, like, I do this every single day. So this isn't your chance to be like, I'll have a go.
Yeah.
Let's have a go on the air. It's like, no, let me do it, innit?
Yeah.
So I take out the sponge, I put some product in there as well, and then I do the sponge, and it was this like, what the fuck is that? The fuck is that sponge you're doing on your hair, man? And I'm like, no, that's what. And it was like, so it'll blow so many people's minds. Like, so you're telling me that's how you get that effect? I'm like, yeah. So it kind of looks neat but picky, but
it's still
me, isn't it?
Yes.
Credit. And where can you buy these sponges? I used to give. Listen, when I was on TV, I was giving out bare tips. These sponges.
This is what I'm saying. Because that's not your job.
My barber used to make the sponge.
Yeah.
He'd get some scissors, cut them, put the holes out. Yeah. So I'm like, by the way, you can make a sponge. You what? Bloody hell. Call blimey. I can make one of these sponges. Yeah. Yeah, Barbara, you can make a sponge.
These times we've been doing this, like, this is normal. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I never forget once doing CBeebies and they was like, oh, you know, you've got to lose your facial hair. I didn't have much at the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, we got to lose your facial hair. So imagine I've gone there. So we're filming on the Monday. Uh-huh. I've gone up there on the Friday just to meet everybody and stuff. So I'm coming back down on the weekend.
Yeah.
So I've gone up there on the Friday and they're like, cool, sew the hair. So I'm sitting there, you know, and he's like, so, cool, okay. All right, the hair. And I'm like, first of all, why is that hair? But I'm like, this is your job. So I can't get too defensive.
Yeah.
So she's like, cool. So they're like, if we can shave the facial hair. So I was like, cool. So every part of me was like, I could have done this on Monday.
Uh-huh.
Now I've got to go back on the train. Like, and as a guy, it's hard to explain. Like, if you just have like a moustache.
Yeah.
That's just your thing.
Okay.
I've got my moustache. I don't have much.
Yeah.
But it's my thing.
Yeah.
It makes me feel more me and more like a man at such.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
And if you're shaving it off by force, I'm like, I don't want
to
shave this off.
So why were they telling you to, so that you look younger?
No. So for the character to just look a bit younger.
Oh, the character. Okay.
So I was like, okay, that's fine. That's, you know, as an actor, you're used to these things.
Of course.
So anyway, they've shaved it off, shaved my facial hair. And I'm already looking at myself like, I fully look like a newborn turtle. Like, this is not, because you know turtles have that front beak, them, that's literally, if I shave this, that's what I look like. It's just that front beak of my lip that just looks so like, I'm like, nah, I don't like that. I don't like that. So I had to shave that off, and whatever else was there, they shaved that off.
Uh-huh.
So now I've just got like, because it's like, there's this thing, right? Especially for black men. When your hair is done neat and you're shaving off something, I'm like, do you know what? It's cool because I can look past it because the trim is there.
Yeah, of course.
But at this point, there's no trim. So now I've got no trim and no moustache. So I'm like, I just don't even look like me right now. I just look like, I look like someone from 1960, like Soul Train advert.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, who's this guy? I'm looking in the mirror. And then it was like, she was like, okay, cool. And how would you do your hair? So I was just like, well, I have a high top and I normally get the sides faded.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay. And she's getting closer. And I'm like, you really think you're going to fade my hair right now? You, not a chance. And it was every part of me that was like, I need to speak up because if I don't, this will happen every week.
Exactly.
So I was like, I can actually get this cut tomorrow. Like, can you really?
Oh,
I was like, yeah, I'll get this cut tomorrow. Yeah. Okay, all right, fine. Come back in on Monday. I was like, wow, hair looks great. I was like, yeah, because there was no chance.
Yeah.
This woman was cutting my hair.
Yeah.
Not even asking me, are you comfortable with me cutting
your
hair?
Exactly.
It was just like, I was like, you think you can fade? My barber sometimes gets the fade wrong. He's a professional barber.
Oh,
let alone this lady who's like, and it's the wrong clippers.
Yeah.
You know, like, the thing is, for any, and even like, you're cutting hair, there's levels of clippers that do certain things, how to change it, different type of clippers.
Yeah.
This woman just had the one clipper that she used for my massage to think she can fade. I said, nah, no chance.
Oh my goodness.
Not a chance. Oh,
that's,
man,
too funny. And I think what's most sad about that, do you know how many people would probably not have said anything?
Yes.
And that's like, oh, mate.
Because,
like,
it's fear.
Yeah, of course. It's because we're so happy to be let in the room.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, you've let me in.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I'm here as a black woman, you know, as a black woman, as a black man. Like, oh my gosh, this is an opportunity, which is, but at the same time, come on, you know you're going to get cussed.
Mm.
You know that people are going to shell you down online, like, and especially now. Especially listen, now.
Black people watch it sometimes just to be like, you're big man, your hairline's mad, you know? Really? Is that? Thanks, man. That's so constructive, Dwayne. Appreciate
yeah,
that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, but honestly, like, this conversation has been so, like, I just, I think we could speak right now for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I really, really appreciate you coming on and doing the podcast, because you came today, you traveled all the way from Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
Like, I really appreciate that, man.
Oh, because no, to the point that, you.
Like, this podcast for me is really celebrating people that have inspired me in so many ways, ways that I've seen people, and especially now, I get to a place of where I am in this world, I am in this industry, and I sit there and I'm just like, rah, like to me, a really like transition from being a musician to going on TV and stuff. And it's like you say, you know, sometimes you only see the person that's on screen, but not get to know the person that was going through some of that stuff. Like, I would never have known what was happening when you're talking about things like Strictly and Loose Women, and or even like some things in your music career. And and that's not to say like we have to become, I've got to be an open book in my career, you know, because there's times where I'm like, oh, I don't really feel comfortable talking about that. I'm just gonna do my music. That's what makes me happy.
Yeah.
But definitely,
I do think that there's, I know I go on about black people a lot, which Middle England love, but I do think that there's so much power in us being authentic and being open to a degree. Now, we're not gonna share everything, like. You know, I think it's very important for, because so many of us don't know. We don't know the opportunities. We don't know that we can, you know, that story you've just told, who knows who's watching this or listening to this and realizes, wow, so I could just say, I'll get my own barber to do it rather than letting, do you know what I mean? And
what I
think,
now still.
Yeah.
Come on. Big up my Black Shabba. My guy. A-class barbers, Campbell. Sorry, got to give my plug.
No, do it. But I think it's really important. And as you said, you don't have to share every little thing, but if you can be, you know, a beacon or a not necessarily a symbol, but if you can be a point of information, especially in the position you are, then you should. Do you know what I mean? And for me, I definitely feel like I know now that, without sounding like old Oprah, but I feel like it's my purpose to share. Like, I really feel like I've done so much, I know so much, I've been through so much. I'm 40 next year, and I just kind of feel like, yeah, man, like, pass it all on. Like, I pass all of my knowledge, I pass it on to my daughters, and I just, like, I don't even fear for the world, but you lot need to be ready for when my daughters touch road. And that sounds really wrong, because it means like, but I don't mean it like that. I mean it like, you know, I just mean like, you know, they're incredible girls. And I just kind of feel like, yeah, I want to pass it on. I would love to leave a legacy. When I leave this world, I want people to say, yeah, she changed this, or she did this, or she made this kind of an impact. And whilst I'm here, I want to continue to be impactful. And what I love most about my career so far has been that, you know, against the odds, I've done that. Against the odds, I've done that. And I'd love to, you know, I don't know. I think for me, to work in TV again would be incredible. Like, to be like back on TV, despite
being you.
Yeah, and well, this is it exactly.
Like, you've got to hold things back,
yeah,
and just be 100% yourself.
Just so I look at someone like you, and I just think like, imagine just like being able to bust jokes and but also have a serious conversation if you want to. And I feel like, you know, I feel like it's incredible, and it's empowering, and it's inspiring. And I'm just like, I was telling my husband that you had Jada Pinkett on the show, and he was just like, Jada Pinkett was on. I was like, yeah, are you doing big things? Do you know what I mean? And it's incredible, and I love to see it. And for me, and sometimes as well, it's kind of like, you know, it's like you're living through another person. It's just like, yeah, man, this is exactly what we're supposed to be doing, and this is beautiful. So make sure you big up this. And that's what I'm talking about, even sharing that. It doesn't have to be me doing it. It doesn't have to be, you know, me in charge or heading up the thing. But just even if I'm in a position to share something and point people in the direction of, you know, I don't know. Does that even make sense? Do you know what I mean?
Definitely, like, 100% makes sense.
Yeah, man. It's just, and I feel like we all need to approach our lives like that as well. Just do things to the absolute top of our ability, and even with the barriers, find a way around.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's a beautiful way to sum up the podcast. But honestly, Jamelia, this has been such a joy and such a privilege to have you on. Honestly,
thank you so much for having me. That.
Not just saying it to be like, it's a podcast, say something nice. But honestly, man, it's like, and some of the gems you drop, and I'm like, Rob, where's you dropping some gems, boy? But man, it's been so fun, and thank you for being on the pod. And also, is any other projects you've got coming up that you want to share or anything?
Well, that's the thing. I it feels a bit silly because like I'm in the room with like Mo Gilligan, who's like done big man. Things. I don't know, the table's on YouTube, but I don't know when I'm going to be re-recording for season two because COVID lockdown, all of that. I don't know, just tell everyone, just follow me, keep an eye on me, and I'll tell you what I'm doing when I'm doing it. But but next year, as I said, I turn 40 next year, so I kind of feel like I would like to do something special. I'd like to have some sort of an announcement, even if I got to make it up myself, and you know. So that's what's coming up. Sounds a bit rubbish, but I'm just being honest. I'm very happy though. Like, I'm happy at home, and you know, and so I'm kind of rolling in that at the moment.
Well, it's been a pleasure, honestly, Jamelia, and thank you so much for coming on the Mo Gilligan podcast. I really appreciate that. Guys, if you did enjoy, make sure you use the hashtag the Mo Gilligan podcast. If you're watching, make sure you like and subscribe. And yeah, take care, and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.
What's up, people? You're listening to the Mo Gilligan podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you use the hashtag the Mo Gilligan podcast.